get to Plum Tower Chapel to the door of Byron's public house, and then back again to the chapel, and then back again to the public house. He had paced slowly at first, planting his steps scrupulously in the spaces of the patchwork of the footpath, then timing the fall to the four verses. A full hour had passed since his father had gone in with Dan Crosby, the tutor, to find out for him something about the university. A full hour he had paced up and down, waiting. But he could wait no longer. He set off running for the wall, walking rapidly lest his father's rumors might call him back. And in a few moments, he had rounded the curve of the police barrack and was safe. Yes, his mother was hostile to the idea, as he had read from her listless silence. Yet her mistrust pricked him more keenly than his father's pride, and he thought coldly how he had watched the faith which was fading down in his soul, aging and strengthening in her eyes. A dim antagonism gathered force within him and darkened his mind as a cloud against her disloyalty. And when it passed, cloud-like, leaving his mind serene and dutiful towards her again, he was made aware dimly and without regret of the first noiseless sundering of their lives. The university. So he had passed beyond the challenge of the sentries who had stood as guardians of his boyhood and had sought to keep them among them that he might be subject to them and serve their ends. Pride after satisfaction uplifted him like long, slow waves. The end he had been born to serve, he did not see, had led him to escape by an unseen path. And now, it beckoned to him once more, and a new adventure was about to be opened to him. It seemed to him that he heard notes of fitful music leaping upwards a tone and downwards a diminished form. Upwards a tone and downwards a major third. Like two branching flames leaping fitfully, flame after flame, out of a midnight wood. It was an elfin prelude, endless and formless. And as it grew wilder and faster, the flames leaping out of time, he seemed to hear from under the boughs and grasses wild creatures racing, their feet pattering like rain upon the leaves. Their feet passed in pattering tumult over his mind, the feet of hares and rabbits, the feet of harts and hinds and antelopes, until he heard them no more, and remembered only a proud cadence from them. Whose feet are as the feet of harts, and underneath the everlasting arms. The pride of that dim image brought back to his mind the dignity of the office he had refused. All through his boyhood he had mused upon that which he had so often thought to be his destiny. And when comfort to obey the call, he had turned aside, obeying the wayward instinct. Now time lay between. The oil was a motivation of the anoint in his body. He had refused. Turned seaward from the royal dock. As he passed onto the thin wooden bridge, he felt the planks shaking with a tramp of heavily shod feet. A squad of Christian brothers was on its way back from the wool and had begun to pass two by two across the bridge. Soon, the whole bridge was trembling. The uncouth faces passed him two by two, stained yellow or red or livid by the seed. And as he strove to look at them with ease and indifference, a faint personal shame of commiseration rose to his own face. Angry with himself, he tried to hide his face from their eyes by gazing down sideways into the shadows spreading all from the bridge. He still saw the reflection of top-heavy silk hats and humble
simple tape.
Like cowls, loosely hanging clerical clothes. Brother Hickey, Brother Quay,
Brother McCown, Brother Pure.
Their piety wouldn't like their names, like their faces.
Like their clothes.
And it was idle for him to tell himself that there are
humble and contrite hearts it might be. Pay them.
Richer tribute of devotion than his have ever been. A gift tenfold more acceptable than his elaborate adoration. It was idle for him to move himself to be generous towards them. To tell himself that if he or stripped of his pride, beaten in a beggar's weeds, that they were generous towards him, loving him as themselves. Our idol and nurturing finally to argue against his own
dismay,
certitude, the commandment of love, bade us not to love our neighbors ourselves with the same amount and intensity of love, but to love ourselves. The same triangle. He drew forth the phrase of his treasure and spoke it softly to himself.
A day of dappled seaborne clouds. The phrase and the day and the scene harmonized in a chord. Words. Was it their color? Did he then love
the living rise and fall of words, better than the associations of legend and colour? Or was it the being as weak of sight as it was shy of mind? He drew this better from the reflection of the growing sense of the world.
Thank you.
With his song. Oh, the green water's pathless. When you wet the bread, first it is warm, then it gets cold. His mother put on the oil sheet. That had the queer smell. His mother had a nicer smell than his father. She played on the piano the sailor's hornpipe for him to dance. He danced. Ta la 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 la, ta la 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 la, ta dee, ta la 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 la, ta la 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 la. Uncle Charles and Dante clapped. They were older than his father and mother, but Uncle Charles was older than Dante. Dante had two brushes in her press. The brush with the maroon velvet back was for Michael Davitt, and the brush with the green velvet back was for Parnell. Dante gave him a cashew every time he brought her a piece of tissue paper. Number 7. They had a different father and mother. They were Arlene's father and mother. When they were grown up, he was going to marry Arlene. He hid under the table. His mother said, "Oh, Stephen will apologize." Dante said, "Oh, if not, the eagles will come and pull out his eyes. Pull out his eyes. Apologize. Pull out his eyes. Apologize. Pull out his eyes. Apologize. Great fire in the
Thank you.